You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Good morning. Great to have you with us. This is the Marlins Rewind. I'm Steven Strom. The Marlins dropped their first game of the season at Lone Depot Park against the New York Mets 5-3. It was a battle of the aces, Sandy Alcantara and Max Scherzer going toe-to-toe. And with the recap, here's the voice of the Marlins, Kyle Seeloff.
Well, the New York Mets find a way to spoil opening day here in Miami against the Miami Marlins in front of a packed capacity crowd of 31,997 here at Lone Depot Park on this Thursday, March the 30th afternoon in 2023, opening day throughout all of Major League Baseball. This was a really, really exciting game this afternoon. Unfortunately for the Marlins, they come up just a bit short. Maybe the premier matchup on the mound in all of Major League Baseball today. Sandy Alcantara went opposite of Max Scherzer, and we're talking about two guys at the top of their games, at their respective ages, and at their points in their career. Max Scherzer, an eight-time All-Star, three-time Cy Young Award winner. And for Sandy Alcantara, the National League reigning unanimous Cy Young Award winner, who was 14-9 with a 2.28 ERA against everybody last season. But Alcantara was marvelous in 2022 and 32 starts, and he put it all on the line this afternoon against the New York Mets. And I'll tell you what, this sucker was pretty darn quiet here today. Sandy Alcantara, as we take a look at the highlights from this afternoon's opening day ball game, was just cruising through the first two innings. He was perfect. He sliced right through Nimmo, Marte, Lindor, Alonzo, McNeil, and Canna in the first and second innings. And on the flip side for Max Scherzer, I thought early on this ball game could certainly favor the Marlins. And I say that because the newcomer, Luis Arraez, second pitch of the ball game, laced a single to the opposite field down the left field line. And immediately the Marlins were in business in the bottom of the first inning this afternoon with Luis Arraez aboard, nobody out, bottom of the first in a scoreless game. Gene Segura then followed Arraez, and he bounced into a 1-6-3 double play. And I thought within reason that was a bit of a turning point in this afternoon's contest because there was quickly nobody on and two out. And from there, Max Scherzer really settled in. He struck out Garrett Cooper, and then he went cruising right through the heart of the Marlins order in the second. That brought us to the top of the third this afternoon. Leading off the third for the Mets was Daniel Vogelbach, and he drew a four-pitch walk. He had a nice day at the plate. Really made Sandy Alcantara work, although the same could be said for 1-9 through the New York Mets batting order. But with Vogelbach at first base with one out in the third inning, Omar Narvaez dribbled a ground ball through the right side and a base hit. Vogelbach went first to third on the one-out base hit by Omar Narvaez. And the runners were on the corners with one out in the top of the third. Brandon Nimmo a chance to plate the first run of the season for the New York Mets.
Banked inside. Those last two pitches, real nice delivery, got on top, real nice strikes on the outside part of the plate.
For you, we'll try to get that for you, but it was a sacrifice fly on a line to left field off the bat of Brandon Nimmo. And the Mets had themselves a 1-0 lead after 2.5 innings this afternoon. I mentioned I really did think the double play by Segura in the first inning set the tempo for Max Scherzer. He would go on to retire the next nine in order. He was just cruising right through this Marlins batting order. He would run into a little bit of trouble later in the ballgame. But the Marlins could not do a whole lot this afternoon in the way of getting to Max Scherzer. This was a 1-0 New York Mets lead through five innings this afternoon. That brought us to the top of the sixth. Sandy Alcantara out there for the top of the sixth inning today. He got Omar Narvaez to ground out to second, but then it got a little bit problematic for the reigning National League Cy Young Award winner. Brandon Nimmo walked with one out. Following Nimmo was Starling Marte. He singled. And runners were at first and third in the top of the sixth inning. Mets had a 1-0 lead, and the batter was Francisco Lindor.
Here's the 0-2 pitch to Lindor. He swings and hits a high fly ball to center field. Jazz is going back. He's still going back. He's onto the warning track, reaches up to make the catch. Tagging from third and scoring is Brandon Nimmo. Marte goes from second to third on the sacrifice fly from Francisco Lindor. The Mets have opened up a 2-0 lead here in the sixth.
Sandy, in my opinion.
I should mention, too, Marte was at second. He went second to third because on his single, Jazz Chisholm Jr. made an error that allowed Marte to go from first to second on the error. So Marte went second to third on the sack fly. After the Lindor sacrifice fly, Pete Alonso walked. So the Mets, with a 2-0 lead, had runners at the corners with two outs, and Jeff McNeil an opportunity to extend the Mets' lead a little bit. Here's the 1-2 pitch. McNeil swings and hits a chopper back over the mound. It's into center field, the base hit. That's going to give the Mets a 3-0 lead. Going from first to third is Pete Alonso. Coming in from third base is Starling Marte. That was a chopper hit right back up the middle. I thought the Marlins had him played perfectly. Both Wendell and Arise dove. Neither one of them could get it. Wasn't going to matter at that point. But that is a seeing eye single. At about four hops back up the middle, the Mets have a 3-0 lead. And here comes. And the McNeil RBI single with two outs in the sixth inning. That spelled the end of the afternoon for Sandy Alcantara. Alcantara today goes 5 2/3, allows three hits, three runs, two earned, four walks, and two strikeouts. So the Mets carried their 3-0 lead into the bottom of the sixth inning, but then it was the Marlins' turn offensively. Heading into the bottom of the sixth inning this afternoon, the Marlins had one hit. They had left one man on base. I'm telling you, Max Scherzer had this thing in cruise control. When he would walk a guy, he'd get a double play. He got two massive double plays in the first and the third, or the fourth, rather, this afternoon. And outside of that, the Marlins couldn't do anything until the sixth inning. And setting the table in the bottom of the sixth with Jacob Stallings, he led off the bottom of the sixth with a double. That was a ringing double to the gap in left center field. Joey Wendell followed. He popped out immediately to third base. But Luis Arraez, who in the bottom of the sixth was about to step to the plate for the third time this afternoon, was already 1-for-2 with a single. Luis Arraez was trying to give the Marlins a little something. They were down 3-0. Arraez came to bat with Stallings at second base with one out in the bottom of the sixth inning. 0-1. Arraez swings. It's a line drive into the gap in right center field. Marte's on the run. He's not going to get it. Around third, headed towards home is Jacob Stallings. Luis Arraez, have an opening day, young man. It's 3-1 New York. Arraez with one out here at the bottom of the sixth inning. Drives home Stallings with a double. And Arraez swaps places with Jacob Stallings. After the Arraez RBI double, that cut into that Marlins deficit just a touch. It was 3-1. Gene Segura struck out. And with two outs, down two in the sixth, Garrett Cooper came to the plate. September, here's a swing of the ball, hit pretty well. Right center field, got a chance, on its way. Goodbye, we are tied in Miami. Garrett Cooper has gone deep. It's 3-3 here in the sixth.
There's some of that power that Coop was talking about he wanted to use this year.
Just like a bolt of lightning, Garrett Cooper, who hit 9 home runs in an injury-plagued 2022, leveled this ball game at 3 apiece after 6. So the Marlins, after Andrew Nardi came on in relief of Sandy Alcantara in the 6th inning, would dip right back into their bullpen in the 7th. In a 3-3 game at the top of the 7th inning, Tanner Scott came on. He got Tommy Pham first pitch swinging to bounce out the 3rd, but Eduardo Escobar followed with a single. Omar Narvaez followed with a walk. The Mets, threatening again, had runners at first and second base with one out. In the top of the 7th inning, the batter was Brandon Nimmo. 1-1. Here's a swing of a line drive into the gap right center field. This might tie the game to his left. Jazz Chisholm Jr. Baseball gets behind him, rolls off the bottom of the ball. One run is in to score. Joey Cora's got that arm, just a wave into third base. Throw comes in towards the plate. Catch, not in time. The Mets have a 5-3 lead. It's a one-out, two-run double here at the top of the 7th inning for Brandon Nimmo. Massive hit in the ballgame. One run was going to score to give the Marlins the lead, or the Mets, rather, give the Mets the lead, and it did. Unfortunately, on the play, Jazz, with way too sharp of an angle out there in center field, tried to cut the baseball off, stumbled a little bit, ball got behind him, rattled off the base of the wall in center field. Two runs would score on the play. And the rest, for the most part, as they would say, was history this afternoon. Mets had a 5-3 lead. We went to the bottom of the 7th. Drew Smith was the first man on in relief for the Mets. Jorge Soler tagged him for a double leading off the seventh. So you're thinking this thing could get a little bit crazy down the stretch. Maybe the Marlins could fight right back, but Drew Smith said no sir to that. Avi Garcia flew out to center, and then Brian De La Cruz and Jacob Stallings proceeded to both strike out swinging, and that would end any threat for the Miami Marlins in the seventh. In the eighth, Oscar Brazoban came on for the Marlins. He allowed a hit and stranded two in the eighth. Brooks Raley pitched a perfect bottom of the eighth inning for the New York Mets. Oscar Brazoban worked two innings this afternoon, came back out for the ninth, faced five Mets, worked around a couple of hits in a ninth. It was a 5-3 ball game, and we went to the bottom of the ninth on opening day here at Lone Depot Park. Marlins 12-18 all-time on opening day coming into this one this afternoon. 2-2 all-time versus the New York Mets. You know, the last time that these two teams tangled on opening day was actually to close out the old ballpark in 2011. You might recall that was a Marlins win that included a John Buck grand slam off of Mike Pelfrey early in that ball game. But anyways, Marlins were trailing by two, headed to the bottom of the ninth this afternoon. And without Edwin Diaz, Buck Showalter held up his right hand and said, I need the lefty, or the righty rather, David Robertson. The lefty, Raley, came on, did a nice job of the eighth inning, but David Robertson came on in the bottom of the ninth inning for the New York Mets. First man that he faced was Garrett Cooper. He struck out swinging. Jazz Chisholm went down on strikes. And the last gasp and the last breath this afternoon was Jorge Soler, who actually went to a 3-0 count, took a 3-0 called strike, and then on the 3-1, Soler hit a fly ball into right field. That was all she wrote. Starling Marte put the squeeze on it. And the New York Mets just continue to do a lot of damage on opening day. They sport the league's best record all time on opening day. And they continue to roll. 40-13 are the Mets, now 41-14. Winners in now six of their last seven on opening day. The most successful franchise in Major League history on opening day. And the New York Mets win this one by a final score of 5-3 this afternoon. For the Mets, five runs, eight hits, no errors, eight runners left on base. For the Miami Marlins, three runs, five hits, one error. They leave two men on base. Max Scherzer is your winner this afternoon. Tanner Scott struggled. He is the loser. And David Robertson collects the save for the Marlins and their victorious effort. Started this ball game at 4:13. Finished it at 6:55. Total game time of 2 hours and 42 minutes in front of, let's see here, 31,997 strong on this opening day at Lone Depot Park in Miami. Diving into the box score a little bit this afternoon, Sandy Alcantara, 5 2/3, allowed three runs, two earned on three hits, four walks, and two strikeouts. Andrew Nardi cleaned up Alcantara in the sixth inning. And let's see here. Nardi went 1/3. Tanner Scott really struggled. Third of an inning, allowed a couple of runs, couple of hits, one walk, no strikeouts. Nice to see JT Shagwa, the new Marlin, come on, and he pitched 2/3 a perfect inning of baseball. And Oscar Brazoban, I know it's just opening day, and I understand guys are fresh, but he saved the bullpen a little bit here. He was the fourth man on in relief for the Marlins this afternoon. Brazoban, all things considered, really did a nice job. Went two innings, allowed three hits, no runs, no walks, and three strikeouts. As for the New York Mets, Max Scherzer, six innings of three-run, four-hit baseball, walked a couple, punched out sixth. Scherzer was making his seventh opening day start this afternoon, his first as a New York Met, but he had previously tossed six consecutive opening days for his former ball club in the Washington Nationals. Drew Smith allowed a hit in the seventh, but that was all there. Brooks Raley with a perfect eighth inning, and David Robertson collects his first save of the season in the absence of Edwin Diaz with a perfect bottom of the ninth, and the Mets win this ballgame by a final score of 5-3. For the Marlins offensively today, pretty light on that front. They were 5-for-30 at the plate. The only Marlin with a multi-hit effort was Luis Arraez, but really, the show of the day was put on by Garrett Cooper. He was 1-for-4 at the plate, but he had the massive two-run homer in the bottom of the sixth inning that leveled this ball game at three apiece. And he also made a couple of sensational plays in the field, one in particular with a runner at second base and two outs in the top of the fourth inning. Jeff McNeil scorched the ball down the first base line. Cooper was playing near the bag, but he had to totally sell out to his left, made a terrific diving stop to save a run. At that point, a big run, and they were all big this afternoon because this one was decided in the seventh inning on opening day. Offensively for the Mets today, again, they pound out eight hits. Brandon Nimmo was 1-for-3 out of the leadoff spot. Starling Marte, who had double groin surgery in the offseason with a multi-hit effort, and Jeff McNeil, the National League and reigning batting champion, had a multi-hit effort. So tough day on opening day for the Marlins. We'll bounce back tomorrow and see what Jesus Luzardo can do when he goes opposite of the southpaw David Peterson. So a couple of lefties on the mound at 6:40 tomorrow night. We'll hit the air at 6:10. But some big news before the game today. The Marlins are now going to avoid Justin Verlander twice in the span of the first 2 weeks. He's got a bit of an arm issue. His velocity was down in his final spring start. It didn't go that well. And some further testing revealed that he's got a bummed arm right now, and Justin Verlander is not going to make his scheduled start on Saturday. In all likelihood, that'll probably be the right-hander Tyler McGill, and it may very well end up being Tyler McGill who will get the ball on opening day for the New York Mets next Thursday at Citi Field. That'll be a 1:10 first pitch in Queens.
And I'm sure it wasn't what he had in mind following his managerial debut for the Marlins, but let's hear from Skip Schumacher following the 5-3 loss to New York.
Skip, obviously not the end result that you want, but how encouraging was it to see the way the guys fought back there in the sixth?
Yeah, Cooper, big hit there in the sixth or seventh, I guess it was, and I think the we just kind of beat ourselves today with the walks, and a lot of the run score were walks, and a little uncharacteristic of just letting free passes get on board, and that kind of what happened here.
Speaking of Sandy, obviously not his sharpest, what do you think led to those troubles?
I think they took good at bats. Marte had long at bats, fighting him almost two or three of the at bats that were long at bats, 3-2 counts, and credit to them for taking really good at bats against Sandy.
On the flip side, Scherzer, what makes him so difficult?
It's been good for a long time. He's got a riding fastball. He can throw his slider cutter anytime, and his changeup is working. And that's kind of vintage Scherzer right there. I thought we put together some good at bats against him. Tying it up there late was really encouraging for us to fight back. The following inning, the top half is just can't walk guys there, and I think that was kind of the momentum swing. That's kind of a shutdown type of inning. And so when that happens and they score on that walk, I think that's what you need to shut down that inning.
In that inning, Jaguar was warming up. I know Nimmo's a lefty, but you've mentioned in the past like he could maybe be one of those ground ball pitchers. Did you think of maybe bringing him in for that?
Yeah, we were going to have him ready for Marte. We liked his matchup with Nimmo. Nimmo's a really good hitter, put together good at bat, good swing on the slider, and we'll take our chances left right there. That we were having him ready for Marte.
What did you see Jazz's route on the Nimmo ball? I know it was a tough play there, but what did you see there?
Yeah, I'll take a look at it again from my angle. I can't really tell from the dugout angle, so I'll take a look at that.
All right. And Cooper, you mentioned the home run, but also a few really good defensive plays early to help to keep you at bay at times.
Yeah, Coop had a really good game. Defensively a few times. I think the game changes with the pick in the first or second with Segura, the diving play down the line. He had a really nice game. So, yeah, that game looks a little different if he doesn't make those plays.
How about the defense in general? Segura had a couple of nice plays. Arias, I think, early on. Just, we've talked so much about it and what it...
Yeah, credit to them. I mean, it was a really well-played game. It really was. Just the walks hurt us. And so I think the defense, Cooper, Arias, Wendell, Segura, I'm happy with how they play today, and I think the at-bats will get better. We face a really tough pitcher. Max is a really tough pitcher, but we continue to take those at-bats and wear them down and give ourselves a chance, which we did. We'll be okay this year.
What's the challenge in those late-inning relievers? Obviously, they don't have their big one because he's out, but just they seem rather dominant, but, those are high-octane stuff.
Robertson's been doing it for a long time. The cutter's real. He's got different weapons to get you out, lefty and righty. Those aren't easy at-bats. Rayleigh's done it for a while as well, so I'm trying to find, we pinch hit Wendell there for birdie. We liked that matchup, didn't work out, but You know, our bench is really good, and we're just trying to figure out matchup-wise, you know, what's the best way to help us win. And we felt like we had the right guys up, just didn't come through.
It's one of those things, it's one game. What can you take away, good and bad, that you like to see better, and what you guys did?
Yeah, I mean, I thought our defense was really good. We had guys on base, didn't come through a few times, but, you know, we keep putting pressure on. That's a really good team. The Mets are a really good team, and I think that, you know, we showed that we can play against them. And Sandy, you know, I'll take my chances with Sandy any day of the week. So opening day, a lot of people, you know, put a lot of stock in the first game. There's a 161 left. But I really believe if we keep fighting like that, we're going to be okay.
How impressed were you with Ross Amon?
Yeah, he helped us. He helped our bullpen, you know, keep a couple of guys fresh for tomorrow. You know, we need that out of him, two inning stints. That's why he's here. Got himself in some trouble too with some walks. But it's important. If we throw our stuff, I've been saying in spring training, if we throw our stuff in the zone, we're going to be just fine. It's when we get the free passes that we're going to have trouble. And but yeah, Bras did great, and you know, helped us stay fresh for tomorrow.
How do you think the guys performed with the pitch clock and everything? With there were a couple times where Buck Showalter came out and talked to them. Do you get any explanations? And how do you think the game flow was like with all these?
I went out and talked to him myself. I think there's one time De La called time, but he was saying time. Because the clock was running out. So I think we're just, you know, still working through that kind of thing. Once it hits zero, we're just trying to figure out, you know, what the verbiage is. I think we'll, you know, work through that. But in general, I think Alonzo was the one that got knocked on the run because he was on the bases and didn't. I haven't seen that one yet in spring training. So again, some of these things pop up that you just that we're still learning about, and that's why he got. I think that's why he got the strike on McNeil.
Let's hear from Sandy Alcantara. 5 2/3, 3 hits, 3 runs, 4 walks, and 2 Ks on the day. Let's hear what Sandy had to say after day one's performance.
First of all, I want to say thank God for keeping me healthy during the game. You know. I think everything was there today, you know, I mean, I was a little bit out of control, you know, so 4 walks today, I feel so bad for myself. So I just got to keep positive, you know, I know we got 161 game left, you know, and we got to keep doing our best to go outside and compete.
That's a tough Mets lineup. What makes them so challenging to face?
I mean, they take a really good, like, a bat today, you know, I mean, they make me throw a lot of pitches, you know, but I mean, you say it, I mean, they are really good, you know, I mean. I don't feel bad about it, you know, just I know what I got, you know, I know what I got, so just got to keep posting and keep getting better.
How much does familiarity play factor in? Like, you face them a lot?
Oh, yeah, you know, when you face the same team all the time, you know what I mean, I think they make a real quick adjustment, so, I mean, I just give some credit to them, you know, because they are super smart, you know what I mean, they know what kind of pitch I am, you know, they just made the adjustment today.
Sandy, with those walks, is it anything mechanical? Is it just maybe not attacking the zone as much?
I don't know. I think first game, you know what I mean? I know I got more opportunity to not walk anybody, you know what I mean? I know what I got. I just got to keep positive, you know, because I know I want to have more opportunity.
Can you walk us through, Sandy, I think it was in the sixth there with Jeff McNeil with the pitch clock and from your perspective, what you saw?
Thinking too much in the pitch clock, like you say, you know, so I think I'm trying to, you know, take my time, you know, but I mean, the clock made me go so quick, you know, and so I just got to make adjustment.
And let's hear from the man that electrified Lone Depot Park. Garrett Cooper tied this game up at 3, and it was a monster shot. Let's hear what Coop had to say after the 5-3 loss.
What adjustment did you make with your timer on there against Scherzer?
Yeah, you know, Scherzer was, you know, cruising through. That fastball up, kind of, you know, he was doing that to me, you know, in the first 2 at-bats. So I was kind of looking for something middle away, and, you know, he left a pitch that, you know, I put a good swing on. You know, he is who he is. He's, you know, he's deceptive in that arm angle, you know, with the slider and the rising four seam. So, you know, I think just trying to get him out and over. He was working a lot of guys away, so. Just kind of, you know, went that way with it.
Walk us through that second at-bat against him. Obviously, he was someone in spring who likes to manipulate that pitch clock. What element does that add to an at-bat when you already have so much to focus on?
Yeah, you know, I think this pitch clock definitely, you know, messes with hitters. You know, these pitchers can use all 20 seconds if they want. You know, they can go as fast as they want as soon as you make eye contact with them. It's just something we're going to have to get used to, you know, especially with someone like Scherz, who's, you know, who's messing with your time any way he can. You know, it's a battle just to, you know, wait some pitches and wait some time. If you take time out, that's all the only time out you get. So, you know, you want to use it as smartly as possible. So it's just, you know, we're just going to have to adjust to, you know, pitchers like that, work fast and then work super slow.
Some great plays defensively with the limit of the shift. Was defense something that you put a little bit more emphasis on this spring?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, talking with the front office and the coach staff, playing a lot of first base is, you know, you don't have the shifts anymore, so you're going to have to cover a lot more ground, you know, especially lefty pull hitters who, you know, like to, you know, pull that ball down there or down the line. You try to be as athletic as possible, you know, to get, you know, as much ground as you can over there.
The line drive, the McNeil play specifically, is it just reaction? How do you go through a play like that?
You know, the ball is probably hit 100 plus, so, you know, it's just hopefully you're in a good spot, you know, where he likes to hit the ball. And just kind of react how you can. So, you know, hit the ball hard and, you know, got my wingspan in there to get it.
In spring, you had mentioned wanting to be this more aggressive. Mm-hmm. That homer, was that you being more aggressive?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, as there's a fine line between being too aggressive really and not seeing a lot of pitches, you know, especially with a guy like that who throws a kitchen sink at you. You know, I think you try to put together a plan each day and each, you know, starter. And I think, you know, I've seen him enough in my career to kind of know what he wants to do. You know, he's working a lot away today, so it's kind of that third of that to eliminate anything inside and just kind of go with the pitch.
Coop, you're, if I remember correctly, the only guy from the opening day roster in 18 when this whole build started. Just from your time seeing all this, just what have you seen evolution-wise in this group and where this group stands? And obviously want to start wanting to know, but with this group, what you think you can do with, obviously, you've got a full season left.
Yeah, you know, we were in there, and it's just, you know, being here in 18 to now, you've seen so many changes from then to now. It's a whole different mindset offensively. You know, the offensive, you know, coaches we have, you know, there's a different plan that I've seen this year than in years past. It's just, you know, we're going to have to battle those guys, those top-end starters where, you know, you scratch two or three runs across. But, you know, just the organization in general from that point is so, so much better. The starters, you know, it's just those guys could all be Cy Youngs. You know, I think, you know, we're in a good spot right now. And, you know, hopefully as we come out tomorrow.
Just curious, because you had mentioned the timeouts. Was it a mixture of you guys wanting to – kind of mess with his pace a bit or also give yourselves more time?
You know, we saw in spring where, you know, guys were calling timeouts against him and he was quick pitching those guys. So I think there's a fine line where you do a call timeout and you got to be as quick as possible in the box because he knows that he can mess as much time with you in there. So I think, you know, he's going to use what he, you know, pleases with his pitch clock. And it's something that, you know, the game of baseball is a little bit different this year. And there's going to be some, you know, growing pains with guys like that, and you got to adapt.
All right, let's get the vibes up. New day, new opportunity, a chance for Jesus Luzardo to take the mound as he faces David Peterson. We can't wait to have you aboard. Marlins on deck with me, Steven Strom. Starts at 6:10. First pitch is set for 6:40. Make sure to follow us on Twitter, @MarlinsRadio. We hope to have you join us. This is the Marlins Radio Network, driven by AutoNation.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. You guys know I'm always up for a good MVP story, and one of the best stories is Wasabi Technology. Wasabi is the world's hottest cloud storage company, and it's become the go-to provider for professional and collegiate sports teams, including 20 Major League Baseball teams like the Red Sox and NHL teams like the Bruins and Vancouver Canucks. Even the Liverpool Football Club is getting in on the Wasabi action. So why is Wasabi the MVP? Well, Wasabi was purpose-built to free businesses from skyrocketing storage costs and unpredictable transaction fees that the Amazons of the world are charging. In fact, Wasabi is up to 80% less than those hyperscalers and doesn't charge a cent for businesses to access their data. From Wasabi's AI-enabled intelligent media storage, Wasabi Air, to the industry's only cloud storage service with triple protection against cyber criminals, data deletion, and ransomware, Wasabi's taking the lead in driving innovation in data storage and helping sports teams to unleash the power of their data. Wasabi, another Boston-based championship team.